ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What happens when medicine is sold like a makeover?
Their marketing is very good.
Clinics with five-star reviews selling miracle cures.
I left that place thinking I found myself a solution.
But it's your body that pays the price.
I had one cheek higher than the other, one cheek further out from my nose.
Before and After, a new series on how medical hype spreads online, who profits and who pays. Search for Background Briefing on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
As you would have seen, the Liberals and Nationals have now officially dumped the net zero emission target from their climate and energy policy. Keeps the coalition together. But what do voters think? Today, pollster, former Labor strategist and director of the Redbridge Group, Cos Samaras, on whether it's a winning strategy. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily.
Uniting behind a plan, the coalition leaders standing side by side, putting months of turmoil behind them.
The group agreed to scrap net zero from the Climate Change Act and repeal Labor's 2030 emissions reduction target.
The plan that I released today is all about affordable energy and responsible emissions reduction.
This debate is not one predicated on science. It is one predicated on economics. The lived experience that Australians are feeling in their energy bill every quarter.
Cos, the Liberals and the Nationals, they're, I guess, one happy family. The coalition lives on, but surely this whole episode has been somewhat damaging.
Yeah, I would say they live on, but their position within the Australian electorate is the worst we have seen, and it is the worst set of numbers they have probably seen since the Federation. So our polling, and including a news poll as well, has their primary vote collectively at 24.
Wow.
Once we remove the National Party, it's at 20. Once we remove the Queensland LNP, the situation for the Liberal Party in the southern states of New South Wales and Victoria is dire.
So it's politically, of course, very damaging to have this sort of argument out in public.
Mm.
Now, there has been, of course, a lot said about the politics of this decision, but what I want to do with you is consider two things. One, the political language being used around this. Now, that's normally known as the spin, of course. And whether or not this decision will actually help the coalition to be re-elected to government. Now, first, the language. When Susan Lee stood up to announce this decision that she was dumping net zero, she really wanted the focus to be on power prices.
Australians deserve affordable energy and responsible emissions reduction. And the Liberal Party believes we can do both. But affordable energy must come first.
That's not a bad message, right, for people struggling to pay those bills?
Not a bad message, but clearly they've not done their research, because when you speak to Australians about what's causing the power prices, the first place they'll go to is that electricity companies are gouging them as consumers.
Mm.
The second place they'll go to is unreliable energy sources. And the third, for a very large chunk of Australians, particularly younger Australians, the reason why it's expensive now is because the transition's taken too long. So they're quite unhappy with governments dragging their feet on this issue, and they are acutely aware that their prices are going up, but still want action on climate change. That you can have two conflicting views at the same time. Unfortunately for the political class, they think it's either one or the other.
All right, so the messaging on power prices was clear from Susan Lee, although very much debatable that the cost of power would actually fall if net zero is dumped.
That's right.
Now, another point that she made is that we should be doing our fair share as Australians.
So our commitment is that we will reduce emissions on average year on year. And I can point to our record in government. That's what we did then. And we will do that in line, doing our fair share with comparable countries. And we'll do it as far and as fast as technologies will allow. So that's our three commitments.
Now, that could resonate, couldn't it? Because we are a pretty small nation compared to, say, China.
Yeah, look, it resonates with a lot of Australians and it resonates with their base.
Mm-hmm.
It is viewed by younger Australians as yet another chapter in a long book written by the coalition on their stance against climate. When we speak to younger Australians, particularly those in our large cities, they will tell us that they have a strong view that the coalition has been historically against climate. They were coming of age, for many of them, where Morrison held a lump of coal in the parliament.
Mm.
They will cite these examples to us. And so this is just, for them, just another chapter in them opposing the country moving to a more sustainable energy future.
There were other comments from the Liberal leader that were rather unclear. She said that they'd be dumping the target, for instance, but they're still committed to the Paris Agreement. So at times it got confusing, didn't it, the messaging?
Yeah, I think this would have been a product of their internal compromise to try to keep their moderate MPs' political futures alive. And when we talk about these particular MPs, these are the few now that occupy seats in our large cities. There aren't many of them. There's about 10. And these individuals have a right to be concerned that that this current policy setting is going to further jeopardise their ability in getting re-elected in 2028.
Okay, so they're saying they want to stay in Paris but abandon net zero, but the Paris Agreement requires nations to reduce emissions through targets. So this is why it gets confusing.
That's right.
And the other thing is the opposition's energy spokesman, Dan Tehan, he has said that a coalition government could use taxpayer money to prop up coal-fired power stations.
So what we've said is we will make sure that we have a technology agnostic approach. We will support the state governments, Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland, who are already sweating their coal assets. So we will support them because we've got to make sure we keep capacity in the system. We will take
But the confusing thing there is, how do you reduce emissions if you're encouraging the use of coal? So I just wonder, in voters' minds, was it getting a bit complicated?
This point is the point that's going to be the most toxic within the electorate, because it will be sending a very strong signal to particularly younger Australians that this is exactly their agenda, and that is to support the coal industry. And so that would be picked up by many Australians as being exactly what they thought, as I touched on before, another chapter in their opposition to taking action on climate.
Mm. Because let's look a bit more now at what voters will make of this. There had been a point, perhaps after the 2022 election, that the climate wars were over. How do voters feel about the fact that we're now debating it again?
Yeah, after 2022, the coalition was rapidly trying to, leading up to that election, convince certain parts of the electorate that they were just as committed to the Paris Accords.
We're going to meet and beat our targets. And we have targets, by the way. The government has a target for 2030, we're going to meet it and we're going to beat it just like we did 2020.
That was obviously in vain, because they still lost a large number of seats to independents in, you know, what we now term as the Teal independents.
Mm.
And after that result, which was so decisive, where of the 8 seats which their former leaders, dating all the way back to the 1970s, of the 8 seats that their leaders have held, 7 of them were lost to independents and to Labor at that election. And so they obviously came out pretty strongly and said that this argument and this debate is over. But now we're back to square one, because basically what's left of the coalition are largely regional MPs, and they're more animated about their constituencies and bring that view to the caucus room. And unfortunately for them, it doesn't resonate all that well in big urban Australia.
So after 2022, of course, there were a number of Teal MPs in the parliament. They had campaigned heavily on climate action. But then the election this year, was it still a big issue in voters' minds or not?
Connor, it's an issue that lives on the side parallel to everything else that Australians are concerned about. So people still think that we as a country need to be doing something significant with regards to not only taking action on climate, but also acknowledging that we need to move fairly quickly to alternative forms of energy. A large number of Australians are acutely aware that the private sector is not actually investing in coal. And so they know that's not where the money is. That's not where the stability is. And the more politics is played with energy, the greater the risk energy prices will go up. And I can guarantee you, I suspect this will be exactly the response from the Labor camp.
The problem is there are consequences behind that uncertainty. AEMO have been very clear about what the cheapest form of new energy is in report after report after report. Renewables backed by gas, backed by storage, backed by hydro.
So there's a thought that this policy, dumping net zero, will play out well in regional areas. Do we know for sure that's true, that people in regional areas would vote for the coalition based on them dumping this policy?
I wouldn't say it moves any votes, except for it does lose them votes, further votes and further support amongst urban Australians. They already have a structural collapse amongst Generation Z. In our previous polling, they are at about 10%. So that is 10% of all Australians aged between 18 and 28 years of age plan to vote for the coalition. And that's lower with women. And so they've got a major problem to confront, and that is they are increasingly becoming irrelevant to the political needs of urban Australians. And in a country where clearly we are very urbanised, that's a significant electoral problem.
Although there is now a real point of difference, isn't there, between Labor and the coalition? Sometimes that works in the favour of a party, doesn't it, because there is that clear choice for voters.
It does. But on an issue that is quite existential for the majority of Australians, you know, most Australians that are living today were born after 1986. And this particular group I've just captured using that year is overall not supporting the coalition. And that's a numerical problem they're going to have to work out how to overcome. And you can only talk to this generation and generations by being serious on climate change, taking action on climate. And unfortunately for the coalition, that is not something they're doing right now, according to the many Australians that we talk to.
Well, Cos, one of the arguments you're going to be hearing, of course, from the coalition, probably over and over again, is that net zero was costing too much, that it was actually pushing up power bills and that was really hurting Australians. Do you think over time, before the next election, they could convince Australians of that?
They'll only be able to convince a certain group that are willing to accept that as a narrative, and that is a small number. And you'll find them in certain electorates. But largely, they are going to be people that have historically voted for the coalition. So again, this is a policy that resonates really well within their base, but a base that is increasingly becoming smaller and smaller. And it's becoming smaller purely because of the back of demographic attrition. Most Australians now under the age of 50, the coalition vote is about 20%. As I touched on before with Generation Z, it's down to 10%. These Australians actually have an absolute opposite view, and that is they do not accept that as an argument, and they think it's political, and they think that it's bringing back climate wars.
So what do you think come the next election then, Cos? Do you think this is a policy that the coalition will campaign heavily on, or do you think it might be better for them not to make too big a deal of it?
Yeah, look, if they are serious about talking to an emerging generation of voters, they need to get back to what they've historically been pretty good at, and that is talking about the economy. The last time the coalition had actually farmed up some significant economic reform was probably dating all the way back to John Howard with GST. So when we talk to younger Australians, yes, they are concerned about climate change as an issue, but they're also very concerned about housing. They're concerned about the cost of living crisis, which they will attribute all sorts of causes to, not just energy. And they think that the political class right now is not in the business of offering up solutions.
Mm, so what do you think ultimately of this decision? Susan Lee has kept the coalition together. And there's something to be said for that, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, and to be fair to her, I think that the poor polling numbers have little to do with her and more to do with the freelancing that's occurred by her colleagues over the last 4 months. And that freelancing has burnt their primary vote and has also triggered an exodus of Conservative voters to One Nation. I think that if her leadership is eventually challenged, it would be probably one of the biggest examples of political gaslighting we've seen in a long time.
Cos Samaras is the director of the Redbridge Group. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Cinnamon Nippard. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Coney. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.